A5. Number 2A.
So today we want to start on the question of synonym and synonymity. It is naturally a question of language. And when it comes to the question of language, actually nobody really knows how language came into existence. We only know that at that early date when they came down from the trees, that they didn't have a big vocabulary, so that the first human beings communicating with themselves must have a very small vocabulary. But we do not know, nobody actually knows yet, how language developed. We only know, say, that the root of our language in the West, the Indo-Germanic root, way down somewhere in the southern part of the Russia, in the Caucasus, there was the birth of our language, and it looks as if the first word that was coined was with a M, ma, and you can see that why all over the world you have mama for mother, huh? Because that's the first sound, so to say, that a child can pronounce. From there it must have gone further, and actually the most important words that we have today are still going back to that rule of ma, of mater, mother, mater is mother, matter, see? And so you can see that somehow through the synonymity of the word ma, we had a development of the whole language. Most agree that actually the synonymity principle was ruling the development of the language, meaning that from a very small vocabulary, or perhaps just one or two words, expanded more and more, developed more and more shades of that meaning. And with every new shade of that meaning, something new could be expressed. And so by the differentiation of those shades, you could build up quite a large vocabulary, which gave us the instrument for communication and therefore for identification of many different things. Actually, at the beginning, language was only concerned with objects, with material objects. First, perhaps you had a sense for a tree and not for an oak and a pine tree and elm tree, just tree. And from tree, again, you had the further shadings of differentiation into various kinds of tree, or you had animals, and then only began to differentiate animals into various kind of animals. This is the principle of synonymity, namely that something, a word, has a general meaning, and that the synonymous term to it were really all referring to that one general term, but were differentiating in some way, in some kind, that general term. Now, this is the same principle that Mrs. Eddy used, namely that she had one term for the whole of being, namely God or being, capital B, and that for that one thing she began to see that one can express that one being from different angles, still being the one being, never being something else, but differentiating according to the circumstances, according to how it was applied in a daily experience, giving to that one term being various terms, the seven synonymous terms. So we can see that the synonymous terms are always overlapping, so to say, with the general meaning. Say you have tree, and if you have an oak, it's still tree, so it's overlapping with the general term tree, but showing oak as a special kind of tree. And so with being or God, the seven synonymous terms actually are always overlapping with that general meaning. They never deviate of being connected with the Infinite One, but are giving us definite aspects of that. Now, you could ask, why is that necessary? Why make it more complicated? Why not to go back to the original and just say being or God? Well, the point is that if we do that, that we have no differentiation. And if we have no differentiation, therefore only one term for God, namely God or being, then we cannot communicate the exact meaning of that term, and we cannot build a science on it. A science demands that one has differentiated and identified concepts on which to build, and that these concepts are so clearly differentiated from each other that they form identity units, very exact, very defined, with a clear-cut value, and on that one can build a system and therefore a science. Now, perhaps I can explain you this not in a very nice way, because when in the sciences of language they try to explain what are synonyms and synonymity, they take as an example the term to die. We are not very happy about the word to die, but it's an example that lends itself very easily to understand the meaning of the synonymity of words. For instance, say, way back in our culture, death must have been a terrific experience and a great mystery. And naturally, they may have had a term, whatever that civilization was, for to die. But today, if you look at this word to die, we are aware that we seldom use it, or when we want to express that very phenomena, but that we have a few dozen synonymous terms for it, and use those synonymous terms for to die in a very delicate way. And so I want to spend a few moments on that, just to give it as an example what synonymity really wants to express. If you take a dictionary on the synonymous terms and look up what they say about to die, what are the synonymous terms, I read you a few of them, just about two or three dozens, just to make you aware of the terrific variety that we can use. And then afterwards we'll see that these synonymous terms are not freely interchangeable. For instance, I found in the dictionary the following. I just read them down and you don't need to make any notes, but they are quite funny. One of them reads, to breathe one's last, cease to live, depart this life, to end one's days, to be no more, to go off, to drop off, to pop off, to peg out, to lose one's life, to drop down dead, drop into the grave, close one's eyes, to give up the ghost, to make the great change, to take one's last sleep, to go the way of all flesh, to kick the bucket, to hop the twig, to turn up one's toes, to join the great majority, to go west, to have had it, to pass away or pass on, to hand in one's checks, to perish, to go to the eternal hunting grounds, and so on. Now, can you see they all have one common denominator? It's all about to die. And yet, they are so expressive because, it's just to say, he died, you bring in a new meaning or you give to that sense of dying a very specific meaning if you take the synonymous term for that. But one has to be very careful which one takes. Say, if a pastor gives a burial ceremony on Mr. A that has died 2 days ago, he has to be careful which one he chooses out of those two or three dozens. Huh? I think it would be very inappropriate if he would say, well, Mr. A just kicked the bucket 2 days ago, or he pegged out. You see? Why? You see? He has to choose something that is adapted to his point of view. He must therefore choose out of that big list just one or two which fits into the angle and into the whole philosophy, so to say, or his religious concept that is adequate to bring out the meaning of to die. So you can somehow figure out that, again, you have the great field, say this is the great array of field of the word to die, huh? And according to which angle you look at it, you have overlapping synonymous terms that go into it. Say like this, if you have a Christian Science approach to it, you say not he died, you say he passed on. Huh? So you bring in into that round field, perhaps I could just draw it like this. If you have here to die, and you bring in the Christian Science field like this, Christian Science, then this here overlaps. Huh? And instead of to die, it means then to pass on, this field here, huh? To pass on. Or if you take in the Indian philosophy of the Indians, then what is in here to die is overlapping here, and it may be to go to eternal hunting ground. Huh? Or if it is a cruel death, a brutal death, and you want to bring in that dying can be something very brutal, something, you bring in the array of brutality, then you have here again a sense, say, to perish. He perished like a dog or so, you would perhaps say. He went into the wilderness and there he really perished like a dog, you may say to somebody. Can you see that you begin to fill in this term, to die, with all sorts of synonyms, according to what? According to what you bring in from the outside, the aspect that you bring in. Huh? According to that new field you bring in, the term will change. I will use a completely different term. So the more aspects we bring in, the more these the number of the synonymous term will grow. But also you can see that they are not freely interchangeable. Just as I have said with the pastor, he has to be very careful what term he chooses for his burial ceremony. that it doesn't choose the wrong one. Can you see that? So the same thing is what we have to deal with when we take the seventh synonymous term for God. There we have also a common array, a common term, God, but according to from the angle and the aspect we speak about God, we'll not say God, we'll say mind, or we'll say spirit, but always meaning the whole of God. And this is another unique feature, really, of Mrs. Eddy's approach to the science of being, that she did choose a unique way for defining a term. For instance, if one defines any term in any science, it is usually so that it is absolutely exclusive. You define, for instance, a chair, and then the definition of chair is so exclusive that it cannot be confounded with a table, for instance, which also has perhaps four legs, just as a chair has. So, in the ordinary language, the definition is always so that it defines. It makes defined, definite, but also finite, so that there is no other possibility to understand something else under that term. Now, Mrs. Eddy was confronted with something that is had to use a different method because her subject was infinite, the infinite one. Therefore, a concept that does not lend itself to make it finite, defined, to make it finite, so that it is distinguishable against something else. And therefore she was the first one to use a completely new way of defining something, namely to define something like God through synonymous terms. That is not allowed in other definitions. See, this is the great problem that you have also in the discussions in the recent years very much, namely that the mystics in Christian Science, or those who have been in Christian Science and went more into the mystical line of Christian Science, that they felt because the infinite is infinite, therefore he can never be defined, because a definition, a definite thing of the term that is infinite is not possible. So that they would say every definition is really limiting the infinite, and therefore refuse the concept of defining God or being. They say that's not possible, because this is a contradiction that the infinite cannot be expressed in finite terms. And this seems rather reasonable and logical, that the infinite as infinite can never be defined, or one would make the infinite finite. Now, this is true if one thinks of the old sense of definition that is used in other fields of science. But Mrs. Eddy used a very unique way, namely the principle of synonymity, using terms that all mean the infinite, like mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. They all mean the infinite. They never mean less than the infinite. And yet, showing that there is the possibility of differentiation, according to the aspect or the approach that is used for defining or describing the infinite. It's just this very principle here, that we have God as an infinite subject, but that one can really define this one God through seven synonymous terms, which are not outside of that term, but inside of the field of God, but always showing that they are meaning the whole, but from a differentiated standpoint. Therefore, and this is perhaps interesting, therefore, if we define God through the seven synonymous terms, and as each synonymous term means the infinite, therefore, and this is now the important thing, therefore, each synonymous term can only be defined again, rightly, through the other synonymous terms. It is not so that one synonymous term for God can stand by itself and say, this is something by itself, this is a concept by itself defining God. It's not possible, because each synonymous term is only defined when it's defined through the other synonymous term. So if you take life, for instance, capitalized life, you say God is life or life is God, whatever you want to say, you must define again life through the seven synonymous terms, because only that is life, which is also at the same time mind, at the same time spirit and soul and principle and truth and love, or else it isn't life. This is a completely new way. If you take any other definition, sorry, I didn't think of it, I could have taken, say, with me a definition of table or of house or anything like that, then the house would never be defined through synonymous terms, but through their own characteristic, and can be a house without having to having any relationship with a synonymous term of house. Not so in the science of being. Here we have that difficulty of having an infinite subject, defining that infinite subject without making it finite. Therefore, if we define God, as Mrs. Eddy does, through the seven synonymous terms, that is only one step, a primal step, because then we would ask, what is mind? Well, mind is spirit, its soul, its principle, its life, its truth, and its love. That would have to be, so to say, the first answer to define mind. So you have the synonymity principle that says if you have a synonym for God, then it is at once synonymous with all the other synonymous terms. Have we established that? That there is no mind without spirit, without soul, without principle, without life, without truth, without love. That only if we define again mind through the synonyms, that we have the infinite concept of mind. Then it's like throwing, so to say, a stone into the lake, and it makes the first ripple, it leads to the second ripple and the third ripple, it goes out and out and out, more and more into details. If we have mind, then we can also ask, what does the term mind itself mean? Only the term mind itself. Then we ask, what are the characteristics of mind that differentiate mind from spirit? Now we come to the differentiation. Can you see? First we have seen that in order to define a synonymous term, we would have to define it through all the other synonymous terms. Yes? You tell me when I go too fast or when something is not clear. It's a seminar, you are allowed to break in at any moment. So if we define mind through spirit and soul and principle and life, truth and love, then the next question is, but how does mind differentiate itself from spirit? If we have to define mind through spirit and through soul. And so we come to a further ripple, so to say, in that picture, huh? Where we say, all right, now we have to see how each synonymous term differentiates itself from each other. And so we get differentiation within the oneness, a terrific sense. You know, something which we don't have in any other science, and which only can be used here because it's the only science that has to do with an infinite subject, which is in no way limited and cannot be limited in any way. Therefore, the question is that we have to ask for the differentiation of the synonymous terms. And these are the ideas characterizing each synonymous term. So a new field opens up of study, actually one of the main interest we have this week, to see how the term mind is differentiated from all the other synonymous terms. And this was the great step forward that has been made by John Dooley, that he began to investigate the textbook and ask, what is that which differentiates mind from spirit, though they are related to the same thing, namely to God? They all are related to the infinite one, and yet they are differentiated. So we began to study those ideas that would differentiate each synonymous term from every other synonymous term. And that's the study of the synonymous term through the ideas characterizing the synonymous terms.